It's the Linebacker Show. We're discussing Luke Kuechly's standing among the all-time greats. Is he better than Ray Lewis? Plus, why offenses aren't trying to steamroll the new breed of undersized backers. Why Bobby Wagner could keep the Seahawks defense from falling off. The Vikings' use of Eric Kendricks and Anthony Barr and our ranking of the top 10 linebackers in football. It's all on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I am Gary Bramling. He is Andy Benoit. We are talking linebackers today. This is our position ranking show. Stack linebackers, off the line of scrimmage linebackers. If you are tuning in to hear about Von Miller, you missed that show. That was edge rushers a couple of weeks ago here. No matter what the All-Pro voting, because All-Pro voting had Miller as a linebacker. Was that the deal, Andy?
It had Miller and Justin Houston and Chandler Jones, because remember I told you I was interviewing Chandler Jones the night, like at that time of year, and I asked. I mentioned it to him before, and he said, well, wait a minute, what did they do with Justin Houston and Von Miller then? And those were the only two other guys that were actually edge players being listed as linebacker. But like Khalil Mack was a defensive end last year. Anyone else? Any of the three, the quote-unquote 3-4 guys, Robert Quinn and Los Angeles under Wade. I mean, all these. But, yeah, they had three of those guys as linebackers inexplicably, and it helped Jones get the All-Pro vote. Not that he wouldn't have gotten it anyway.
Yeah. Well, that's no good, and we are not going to recognize that that tyranny. These are I guess you'd call them traditional linebackers. What you think of as linebackers, your middle linebackers,
stack,
your inside linebackers.
Stack backers. Stack say, off the ball.
I think stack is how we usually address it on this show, but we're just going to probably say linebackers or shorthand during the show. But we will have, in a few minutes, our unveiling of the top 10 linebackers in the NFL. But we have a couple topics to talk about first, and let's start up top here. Obviously, the big trend with these players over the last, let's say, 5 to 7 years, they get smaller. Leagues throwing a lot more. Linebackers have gotten smaller. It's more about speed than it is about size and thumping and what it used to be at that position. I feel like no one's really been punished for that much. I mean, whether it's Deion Jones or Deion Buchanan or Darren Lee, why is that? Why have we not seen a trend, a significant trend of offenses going big with the run game and sort of trying to steamrolling these guys? And does it have anything to do with the fact that defensive linemen are so much better than offensive linemen these days that it almost doesn't matter? You can't get those linemen to the second level anyway to block these small, tiny stack linebackers anyway.
Yeah, let's look at it from the offensive side, because really what you're asking is, why are teams getting away with putting little linebackers on the field and the offense is not ramming the ball down their throat and just running over those little linebackers? That's what we're getting at. Brad White, who was the Colts edge rushing coach last year, is now at Kentucky because he was on the Chuck Pagano staff. So he goes from one white and blue uniform to another white and blue uniform. He made one of the most interesting points to me this year at the Senior Bowl that I have ever heard. And it was so, all the best points are always simple. And he said, in football, a 5-yard run feels really good, and a 5-yard pass completion does not feel very good.
Yeah.
And the only team that really doesn't care how you get those 5 yards is the New England Patriots. That Tom Brady, he'll feel good on a 5-yard completion. But we talked about the psychology behind that for a little bit of, yeah, why don't teams simply run the ball more, especially against these lighter defenses? Because 5-yard runs do feel good, and yet we see so many teams spreading out and throwing the ball, and who can commit to that, and who can commit to the dink and dunk? And ultimately what happens is teams get impatient, they try to get chunk plays. Everybody likes explosive plays. When, in fact, when you talk about exploiting linebackers, in this context, with undersized guys, we're talking about inexplosive plays, sustained offense, grinding offense, and now it's a Jacksonville Jaguars discussion. Are we happy with Jacksonville's offense and approach? And the issue I have with that is you leave yourself so much less margin for error when you matriculate the ball gradually down the field, because the more snaps you have, the more chances you have of something going wrong offensively. That's true for the defense as well, but defenses are designed to make offenses have to run a lot of plays. It's that whole bend but don't break thing. defenses believe that the offense, as the aggressor, they're going to screw up at some point, and they're not going to last 10 or 12 plays. They'll get a false start. They'll have a drop on a play where they do have to pass. They'll botch
give
a fumble exchange.
Yep.
Yes, I mean, something will go negative, and all of that takes away. The second something goes wrong and you go off schedule, your running game goes out the door. So teams are getting away with light linebackers because it's a passing league, and there's an emphasis on explosive plays more than ever.
Well, it's also, and I mentioned this last week, the rules of football have been designed to encourage passing as much as possible. I mean, we give all these advantages to receivers versus defensive backs, and that's kind of, this is what you get a little bit. I mean, it's almost like the, you sort of mentioned the 5-yard pass versus the 5-yard rush. It's almost like the 5-yard pass is so much easier to get than the 5-yard rush.
Yeah. Well, so I'll let me make a better name drop than Brad White, Joe Thomas.
Yep.
When I sat down, yeah, how's that for? Ooh, look at that one. When I sat down with Joe Thomas and watched film a few years ago for our MMQB Film Room series, first of all, we watched 5 plays because that's how long Joe Thomas talked. We sat there for well over a half hour. He goes through these plays in such detail, and he ran the clicker. It wasn't even a discussion. So one of the points he made is that, look at it this way. There's 5 or 6 blockers up front. So everybody, that's 5 or 6 guys that have to win, plus the QB has to get the exchange. The running back has to get on track and do his thing. So there's a 6th or a 7th guy that 7 people have to succeed. And if all of those people do their jobs and nothing external works against them and nothing unlucky happens, you might gain 4 yards. That's the running game. So there's more variables in the running game, which gets back to the idea of these long drives. The more there is of something, the more chance there is of something going wrong. Versus the pass game, these pass plays that are replacing the run plays are the little quick screens to your Jarvis Landry type guys, which have very few variables. A QB throws to a receiver, and maybe one other receiver blocks for that wide receiver. So 2 or 3 guys have to do their job rather than 6 or 7. It's easier yardage available to them. And so linebackers become run and chase players. The tackles occur outside when you throw to wide receivers, swing passes, all that stuff. And run and chase guys are smaller, and it works out that way.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's no real reason to think that this is going to reverse itself in the next 2 or 3 years, let's say. We'll see what happens after that. But it doesn't seem like there's something coming around the corner. We're not going to see a bunch of Leonard Fournette type of offenses popping up around the league.
I mean, it always feels that way in the moment, but then it happens and you think, I mean, things, it's cyclical, as we always hear, things change. Let's ask this, Gary, because I don't disagree with you, but if it were to change, let's say in 7 years we look and we say, man, boy, the teams with the best power running games, the teams that have the Emmitt Smith, Jerome Bettis, Bell, Calback, those are the guys that are winning playoff games. What would have had to happen for us to be saying that?
I think pass defenses had to get a whole lot better. Quarterback play had to get a whole lot worse, which I guess I could see if quarterback play slips.
It had to slip a
that
lot,
it does.
Though.
We had 5 in the first round this year. We might get none in the first round next year. I mean, presumably one of these guys will probably, they rise up anyway. So, but it is not nearly the crop in college right now is not nearly what it was 2 years ago, let's say.
Yeah.
I'm not banking on that happening. I'm just saying it's a possibility.
Yeah,
and you're going to have guys
absolutely.
You're going to have Philip Rivers retiring. You're going to have Tom Brady retiring. Probably not Aaron Rodgers quite yet. Maybe Eli Manning is gone. So now you got Davis Webb there instead, and you could see a somewhat sharp decline in quarterback play. That wouldn't shock me.
I would say what would have to happen to make it more of a run league is this read option stuff would have to come back for one. And you're talking about guys retiring. Mm-hmm. Well, the next generation, the guys that just came in, a lot of them had the mobility to run read option. Sam Darnold's a great example. He's not a mobile quarterback per se, but he is mobile enough, mm-hmm. Josh Allen certainly, that you can put him into your run equation and make the defense have to defend him. So if a team gets good at that, think about defending yep. Cam Newton and what kind of linebacker you'd want on the field if there's a Cam Newton-type QB, or even back when there was RG3 there and Washington. So maybe running quarterbacks become a bigger threat schematically, and in that case there's a real incentive because you want big linebackers hitting those QBs. And then the other mm-hmm. thing, it's back to our Kyle Shanahan discussion from a few weeks ago, is, and there's a guy that kind of invented the modern zone read game, by the way, just so it's these innovative yeah. offensive coaches, but that's where the really explosive plays come from. Shanahan plays out of base personnel with fullback Kyle Juszczyk on the field, and they throw from that. And you get those – it's an explosive play league. You get more explosive plays out of running situations and running personnel, especially with the play action mm-hmm. factor, than you do out of three wide where it's dink and dunk. Running personnel, you get predictable coverages. You draw up a play that's designed to beat that exact coverage, and that's how you get explosive plays. So I could see it cycling back around, but you're right. The rules have changed so much, and the quarterbacks are so protected. The dink and dunk, teams view that as an extension of their running game anyway. So they don't think we're not running the ball. Yeah. They think Jarvis Landry's five catches for 30 yards, those were our run plays.
Yep. All right, before we move on here, Andy, you know, at Buffalo Wild Wings, we'll admit that we often go overboard with our limited time offerings. We just can't help ourselves. Take our new signature sampler. For $15, you get wings and three shareable options like fried pickles or cheese curds. Then there's our aptly named over-the-top nachos, a literal mountain of crispy tortilla chips loaded with your choice of pulled pork or honey barbecue grilled chicken, corn, jalapenos, and more. Then top it all off with our new platinum margarita. Go overboard with us today at Buffalo Wild Wings. Wings, beer, sports. Available for a limited time while supplies last. Please drink responsibly. Let's go on to the next topic here. This is let's talk Carolina Panthers. The Panthers it's been like literally a decade now of Kuechly and Thomas Davis anchoring what's been pretty much the best linebacking core in football. Thomas Davis, as well as retiring after this year, he's going to be suspended for the start of 2018. That means Shaq Thompson is stepping in. We actually have we're going to play a clip. This is from the press coverage podcast on Panthers.com.
TD suspended for the first four games of the season.
The first quarter of the season, that's a long time. Shaq Thompson, he's been good since he's been drafted here, but he hasn't, you know, we see these glimmers of greatness and they haven't been consistent. And I think this is now an opportunity to do that.
I think that's the bottom line for him at this point in his career heading into year four, is we want to see the potential that we keep hearing about and the training camp splash plays that we see every so often. It's like, okay, let's see that during the regular season.
So, yeah, you know, Andy, we've kind of been waiting for, we've been waiting for Thomas Davis to wash out of the league since, like, 2007, and he just keeps on sticking around. But I think it's quite clear Shaq Thompson came in to be the heir apparent there. He started taking some more snaps from Davis last season. Is there really that much of a drop-off between Davis and Thompson right now heading into 2018?
No, there's not a huge drop-off. And by the way, Shaq Thompson's one of these small linebackers we're talking about. And he yes. is so – these Carolina linebackers, I love talking about them because they blend the conversation. So the other reason linebackers have become small is they're forced to do more in coverage, which we kind of touched on a little bit. It's more of a passing league. But
yeah.
Teams are more deliberate about getting shots against linebackers downfield, having seam routes, having receivers run north and south, east and west across the field against them on these deep routes. Those undersized linebackers have a fighting chance of running with it, and Shaq Thompson's a great illustration. There were times last year that Carolina used Shaq Thompson as a nickelback. Teams would go into three wide receivers like they do, first and second down, and Shaq Thompson would be in there covering the slot guy, and they can do that because they play so much zone in Carolina. Thompson can run well. These are evolutionary linebackers. Here's the discussion, is how much do we criticize, that's what these guys were trying to get at as well, is how much do we criticize Thompson for what, and I would not say he has had a lack of development, but it's been a little bit slower than you would have guessed. But he hasn't gotten on the field as much because Thomas Davis, as you said, has not washed out the way we expected him to.
Yeah, I mean, This is why they drafted him. They probably played. I don't have the numbers. You might know off the top of your head, but they must have three linebackers on the field as much as pretty much any team in the NFL, Panthers. So I mean, you know, this is sort of a question. This is sort of a chance for them to move away from this anyway. And as we said, you know, Thomas Davis, who thought Thomas Davis was going to play until age 35 here, but I mean, you know, they drafted him with the thought in mind that they would have a guy to take over for Davis, and this is the time to do it. Like this is now arrived.
It's a good. It's a good problem, though. Davis has not let his job be taken. It's not that Thompson hasn't gone and earned it. It's that Davis hasn't let go of it. You wonder if Davis has his knee injuries, 3 years of his prime were wiped out. He'd probably be a Hall of Famer if that weren't the case, mm-hmm. because the narrative on him would have started earlier, and we would have thought of him as a great linebacker for the last 10 years rather than the last 4 or 5 years that we've noticed. You wonder if he'd still be here in the league if he'd played those three. He got 3 years off from his body when your body's theoretically taking the biggest toll it can take in your career. It's remarkable the way he's come back, and he's faster now, I believe, than when he, at least as a football speed. I don't know what his 40 time is, not that it matters one iota, but as football speed, he plays faster now than he did when he came in the league out of Georgia.
I'm going to do something unforgivable and spoil our countdown, Andy. I think to the surprise of no one, Luke Kuechly is going to be number one in the linebacker rankings. We unveil him a little bit. But I want to ask you, as long as we're talking Panthers here, Luke Kuechly, I mean, obviously he's still, you know, still a annual Defensive Player of the Year candidate, you know, barring any more concussion problems or other injury problems. All time, where do you put Kuechly?
I think we need to start with where's he on, what kind of pace is he on? I mean, he's only been in the league, this is his seventh season coming up. He came in 2012. Feels like he's been here a lot longer. Doesn't it feel like he's got to be 31, 32 by now, and he's in his mid-20s still?
Wow, he is. I thought you were exaggerating right there. He's 27 years old. I am legitimately shocked by that.
And he looks like he's 12. I remember the first time I saw him was at the NFL Awards thing after in the 2012 season. He was getting the NFL honors. He was getting Defensive Rookie of the Year, and he came into the little press tent. The press gets to sit out. They don't have to wear tuxedos. They get to sit out in a little tent outside theater. He came in, and I thought he looked like a boy. I mean, a very big, strong, could break me in half kind of boy. I've never seen someone who looks so young. And anyway, do we put him over or under Patrick Willis for where he is in his career? Let's start with that.
Are we talking if he retired today, where would he stack up against Willis, or where do we think he will be in, let's say he plays 2 or 3 more years at least?
Let's say he plays only two or three, because Willis, I believe, lasted 8 or 9 years. I mean, Willis did not have a lot. He'll be an interesting Hall of Fame discussion in a few years. Let's say Kuechly does this for 2 or 3 more years.
I think you put him above Willis.
Yeah, I would too. How about different types of positions, certainly, but let's – Derek Brooks.
I think I put him above Brooks, though that's partially because, not to say the Panthers didn't have great players around Kuechly, but, when I think of that Bucs defense, I think you think about Warren Sapp first, I think about Simeon Rice, probably not better than Brooks, but Simeon Rice being certainly an all-pro caliber player. I think I give Kuechly a slight edge there.
Well, and then also there was John Lynch on the Bucs. He played strong safety, and Brooks was known as the weak side linebacker, and he really revolutionized. They were the first team, at least that I'm sure there's always a team ahead. Someone else did it first. But for me, in my lifetime, they were the first team that really had this emphasis on speed at linebacker. And Brooks was one of the first undersized guys, and they put him on the backside away from the ball, and they let him run to the ball. And we see more teams do that with their top linebacker. And that's what Miles Jack does. often, not always, but he does that a lot of the time in Jacksonville's scheme. Telvin Smith's actually probably even the better run and chase guy there. But you would put him, you said he is above Brooks for you because Brooks had the better supporting cast?
If he's given two or three years at this level, two or three more years at this level, yes, I'd put him above Derek Brooks.
Okay, and I wouldn't put up a huge fight on that, but let's now take it to our current Hall of Fame yep. inductees coming up, Brian Urlacher and Ray Lewis. And maybe we also debate who we rank one and two between those two, but
yeah.
Where does Kuechly fall? How do we rank those three guys? Let's do it that way.
Boy, I think I'd go Ray Lewis, then Kuechly, then Urlacher. Again, projecting okay. out Kuechly at this point.
Are we talking on-field or are we talking intangibles? Ray Lewis, you got to give him some of the – I mean, as much as I don't like – and I think a lot of guys rolled their eyes when he did mm-hmm. this, the Joe Flacco tights, but the guys that needed to hear it did not. This rah-rah, us against the world, I'm a man, let me preach to the locker room stuff. I think – do we credit Lewis for that in this discussion or do we separate that?
Yeah, he gets a certain amount of credit for that. Ray Lewis, that was sort of later in his career. He played for so long. I mean, he played from the mid-90s until the Joe Flacco years.
So what's interesting, as we're going through this, I think that's where the shift took place schematically in football because Derek Brooks, mm-hmm. Ray Lewis, and Brian Urlacher – The thing, and especially Urlacher and Lewis, the one thing you would hear about them when they were being derided privately around the NFL, which was not rampant, not often, but somebody's always got something critical to say. The thing they would say is, well, those guys really are not tough, thumping linebackers. Urlacher yeah. will run around blocks and try to
yep.
keep himself clean. And Ray Lewis, remember when they put him in a 3-4 and they took away his two D tackles in front of him, he yeah. went on ESPN and griped about it and said, you got to keep me clean. I need Sam Adams. I need Tony Siragusa, whoever it is. I need someone in mm-hmm. front of me. Let me run to the ball. And there are some who said, well, that's wimpy. Nobody says that now, but I think that was when we saw the shift in the NFL is the Ray Lewis, Brian Urlacher were dominant run and chase linebackers, and Urlacher especially in coverage when he would drop back in the middle hole in those Tampa 2 coverages that they did in Chicago. That's kind of where I wonder if it's almost a chicken or egg thing for how teams did linebackers. Yes, they needed someone to defend these passes of spread offenses, but those guys, Lewis and Urlacher, they were the mid-2000s. They were before the spread offenses, and they yeah. were running chase linebackers. Maybe they're, maybe they set the trend as well.
Yeah, no, I think that's fair. How would you rank those three? Because you were so, I could feel the old skunk guy coming through the airwaves on that one.
You don't think I approve of how you ranked them?
I don't think you approved of my Lewis, Kuechly, Urlacher ranking.
Here's the problem: how old are you? I'm 32. You're 40, right?
I'm not 40 yet. I'm 39.
Oh, okay. Because you look like Paul Rudd, and he's in the movie This Is 40, and yeah. I always think of you with Paul Rudd, as you know. So I've thought you were 40 for 3 years now. You're 39. Good for you. You could still – that's why you're still a good editor. You saw these guys at a more mature stage of your life. What, you've thrown your hands
yeah.
up?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No. I don't know why being 39 makes me a better editor than if I were 40.
You're fresh. You're going strong still. You don't need to turn
still
in
going
at midnight.
Strong. Yeah. Yeah. Something like that.
I was a kid when I watched these guys.
Yeah.
So I can't – I mean, when you ask me to rank one, two, and three, you have to really separate into fine detail. I'm inclined to put Kuechly ahead of both of them, but that's because
really? –
I'm sure part of that's because I've studied Kuechly schematically and I've talked to his coach.
Yep.
I didn't do that with Urlacher and Lewis very much. I mean, a little bit, but not like I do now. So
well,
I think I've got some recency bias on Kuechly.
I think the bigger issue when we're talking Lewis versus Kuechly, at least the way we're projecting Kuechly right now, I mean, Lewis almost had I don't want to say he had like two separate careers because it's not like there was a clear demarcation, this happened and then he was a different player. He was around for so long. I mean, he was around for the first year of the Ravens, and then if the way we're projecting Kuechly out, I mean, Lewis played another like 6 years after that, and obviously he was more of a toward the end he was more of a complimentary player than the same dominant guy he was in the early 2000s. But that's why it's tough. It's the old he played for a long time,
right?
And therefore we remember him toward the end, where it was kind of like, he's still pretty good, I guess. Type of part of his career.
Well, towards the end, the issue in Baltimore, from what I heard, was that Ray Lewis really couldn't cover anybody towards the end. But it was a nickel league by then. Everybody played nickel.
Yep.
So if you take Ray Lewis out of coverage, you're basically benching Ray Lewis. He's going to play 25% of the snaps. And nobody had the gall to bench Ray Lewis. Nobody wanted to approach him about that. And nobody wanted to be the one that approached him in front of the locker room. That's a big deal. We talked about he's the leader there. But I know the 49ers, when they went into the Super Bowl, the name of their game plan, what they referred to it around themselves, each other, was the assassination of Ray Lewis. They were going to go into the Super Bowl and expose him for the man who can't cover. This was going to be the defining moment of Lewis's career, and it was going to be a down moment. We're going to beat him in coverage. And that was their whole goal. They really, and by the way, they only got to it about one. Vernon Davis did get him one time. They didn't quite get into that full rhythm with it, in part because they were playing, they're playing from behind, but that should have made it easier to throw the ball on Lewis.
Yeah.
But anyway, that was how the Niners had no regard for that Ravens defense, in large part because of Ray Lewis that year. I'm sure Lewis gives no craps because he's got the ring now.
He does. And that's the other thing. You know, as much as he was down that year, he did still win a Super Bowl as a guy who played a ton of snaps on that Ravens defense. So
remember after that, I've told you that story of after that Super Bowl, right? Where I was there for Football Outsiders. Can I say that in this podcast, or do I come across as a total creep?
Yeah, sure. Because if it gets a little blue, we can edit it out later since we're not live.
Oh, well, that's all the best stuff gets edited out. That's right. I didn't have anything to do after the Super Bowl. I was with Football Outsiders. I wasn't writing on deadline that night, so I just wandered around down in the bowels of the Superdome, and I see Steve Bisciotti's family coming down the way, and so I just kind of join them and walk with them. There's like 40 people with them. I was just going to blend right in. But then Ray Lewis's family comes in, and there's about 20 or 30 people with him, and the two families are walking as one group. Bisciotti stops and veers off, and Lewis's keeps going towards the locker room. And I didn't know I was allowed in the locker room. I didn't know that. So I thought, I'm going to just sneak into the locker room. Now, I didn't blend in with the Lewis's the same way, and some of them said, hey, I don't think everybody here is family. But they laughed and just kept going, and I just followed Ray Lewis into the locker room. Then the really weird part was I didn't know what to do when I was in there. So I just stood about 8 to 10 feet away from his locker, and I didn't mean to, but I'm sure if you just watched the video of it, I was just a guy standing there staring at him. And his kids were there. His kids were there. They were kind of standing and staring as well. They weren't sure what to say in that moment. So it was Ray Lewis's two children, about ages 8 to 10, and then me in my mid-20s, who he's never met and doesn't know, standing there. And as soon as he started to get undressed, I realized the weirdness, and I turned and vacated.
Good old Cousin Andy.
Yeah. And the only part I remember, but the part I never reconciled is Ray Lewis had a shoe, a gold cleat. It was like a commemorative cleat from Nike or someone. And it listed all of his accomplishments on the shoe, like on the sole of the shoe. I think it was like you had to take this. It was the inside sole that you took out, like the insert.
Yeah.
He took that out of the shoe, handed it to one of his kids, and just said, read that. And the kid sat there and read the shoe. The kid didn't know what to do at first. And then he thought, okay, I'll read the shoe. And so,
oh wait, he read it to himself, like he didn't read it out loud.
Yeah, yourself with like handing a Game Boy to a kid at the grocery store line. Not that anyone has Game Boys anymore. handing your cell phone to him now. Not that anyone has cell phones. Handing your smartphone to the kid in the grocery store line. He handed the kid the sole of the shoe and just said, "Read Daddy's accomplishments there." And the kid didn't quite know what to do, and he probably didn't understand. You know. 8-time Pro Bowler, 4-time interception leader at Lyman. I mean, what's a kid going to do with that? But that was my Super Bowl experience, watching Ray Lewis sit in his locker, just me, him, and his kids. He never looked at me once, by the way. I was not the first to just stand and stare and watch Ray Lewis.
Yeah. Well, there you go. As a family member of Ray Lewis, I'm surprised you wouldn't rank him above Luke Kuechly. But All right, we'll get more contemporary in a second, but first, you know, a lot of men struggle with shaving. From ingrown hairs to razor burns, just overall skin irritation, it's a painful choice that most men don't enjoy. Now there's a razor that takes the pain out of shaving and makes it an enjoyable experience that you'll actually look forward to. It's called OneBlade. I mean, I used to always use the cheap disposable razors. I get the really thick facial hair, and it gets to a point where I just gave up on shaving. I was doing it like once every like 2 weeks. And it's a problem because I can't do the mountain man look. I should look like Luke Kuechly. I should be clean shaven and look like a young man. Now I can shave every day again, and it's thanks to OneBlade. OneBlade will give you the best shave of your life with no razor burn or ingrown hairs. It's been obsessively engineered to be the optimal tool for performance shaving, from the perfect pivot and weight to the finest materials such as ultra-high-grade German stainless steel. This is an heirloom quality razor you can pass down for generations. Each one is hand assembled and serial numbered, and every OneBlade is backed by a full 60-day money-back guarantee and a lifetime warranty. So if you're ready to have the best shave of your life, visit onebladeshave.com/10things. That's 10things. Try it. Give it some time, and if it isn't the best shave of your life, simply return it. Visit onebladeshave.com/10things. All right, Andy, moving back into 2018 here. Let's talk a little bit about the Vikings here, specifically Anthony Barr. And actually, we have another clip here. This is from the Purple Podcast. That's 1500 ESPN Twin Cities.
Anthony has kind of been taken away from the pass rushing role that he showed flashes of when he first came into the league and kind of exploded onto the scene. And, you know, last year you bring up the point of, okay, well, should they make him more of a pass rusher? And they, you know, Anthony Barr's sack numbers have gone down every single year. Started out at 4 his, you know, rookie year in the NFL, and he only had 1 last season. As Mike Zimmer said, you're not just always looking at that number, but when I'm looking at paying this guy top dollar and potentially, you know, a $12, $13 million a year base salary, I want to see different things that we're not seeing currently.
So yeah, Andy, let's start at the top, and then we'll get into the contract situation. But the usage of Anthony Barr. I mean, he did come into the league. This is a guy who he was almost considered a little bit raw coming into the league. You know, it was sort of mold him how you want to mold him. And you know, he's been used sort of in a more traditional way than I think a lot of people might have anticipated when he was drafted in 2014. Do you take any issue with how he's been used? I mean, he was a top 10 pick back in 2014.
I don't have any issue at all with it. This is an interesting discussion because what they're saying on this podcast is, I think, what some people around the league have been saying, and it's certainly what the Vikings should say to Anthony Barr's agent on the first day when they sit down and have contract talks, which
yep.
is, well, Anthony Barr didn't have any sacks. And he was drafted. Now, this isn't what the Vikings, they can't say this, but people around the league thought he was drafted to come off the edge. They thought he was going to be more of a blitzer, more of an edge guy at UCLA. And in Minnesota's scheme, he has been an excellent blitzer, but not necessarily a productive one in terms of sacks. And so that's where the discussion will be for Minnesota's side is that, well, he doesn't have the numbers, we can't pay him. But what Anthony Barr's agents will say is, come on, guys, cut the bull crap. You know darn well he doesn't have the numbers. He plays within the context of a scheme. The scheme doesn't ask him to get numbers. You don't get credit for knocking Rodgers out of the game, but that's a big play. That's part of it. He's an enforcer. He's a solid run defender. You've got one of the best run defenses in the NFL. He does the double A gap stuff because he is a good blitzer. He influences protections, and you're not going to play him off the edge because you already have Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter and Brian Robinson sometimes. So he is a perfect fit in Minnesota's system, and that fit in that system does not necessarily reflect dominance on paper, which now the discussion is, how do we pay him? What's he worth because of that?
Yeah. Well, let's talk about that real quick. You know, they made the move. They locked up Eric Kendricks. Now they have a decision to make. They have Barr, they have Danielle Hunter, and they have Stephon Diggs are all due for pay raises here. Presumably they can't lock up all three. Is Barr the guy you let walk? Because I think you're looking at that. and you're talking about just position value, let's say. Let's say what each of these guys would demand if they got out on the open market. I think you would say the stack linebacker compared to the edge rusher and the number one receiver, those are the that's the guy who would have the least value. That's the least premium position.
It is, but Daniil Hunter plays the most premium. Let's keep it on the defense and go Hunter versus Barr for now.
Yep.
Hunter is going to cost more because he's a defensive end, and he does have sack numbers.
Yep.
Barr is a more consistent player than – I like Hunter a lot. Hunter, I thought, was a little bit up and down last season, especially from considering how he had groomed and grown in 2016. So Kendricks just cost $25 million guaranteed. Is Barr worth – $20 million? $30 million? Where is he related to Kendricks? And then how do we feel about that number compared to Hunter, who probably will garner mid to high $30 millions? Depends on the length of the deal, maybe mid $30 millions. I would be more inclined to keep Anthony Barr, I think. This is a hard one. I mean, what are you?
Yeah.
Maybe we start with Kendricks or Barr. Who's worth more? They signed Kendricks first, but does that mean they like him more? Or is that because Barr? Did they like him more, or does Barr's deal harder to figure out? So they got the easy one done. I don't know the answer to that. I don't know who's more valuable to Minnesota in their eyes, Kendricks or Barr.
Yeah, look, we'll touch on Kendricks a little bit when we get to the top 10 here. Both Vikings guys made the top 10. Which, you know what, let's just go to it now. Let's introduce our unveiling of the top 10 linebackers in the NFL heading into 2018. As always, the way we do this is AP poll style. It is me. It is Andy Benoit. This week, it is our researcher, Ryan Taylor. We all cast our votes for the top 15 linebackers in the NFL. If you got a first-place vote, you get 15 points. Second-place vote, 14 points, down to 15th place vote gets 1 point. Andy's votes count double because he knows twice as much about football as anyone else out there. So let's start. We'll do the countdown with the top 10, but we'll start with the others receiving votes. So this would, if you are scoring at home, this would start with number 11. That would be Dante Hightower. Then we have Miles Jack, Jamie Collins, Thomas Davis, Vontaze Burfict, Quan Alexander, Reuben Foster, Shaq Thompson, and Zach Brown. I don't know if you had a big issue with any of these guys getting left out, Andy. I really didn't look at any of the others receiving votes and think like, wow, we really blew it here. I thought all those guys are sort of fringe top 10 guys, and I think all the guys we have in the top 10 are legit top 10 guys.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I'm fine with it. There are two guys. Are we doing later in the show? Are we doing like breakout guys? Because there are two guys who are not getting votes that I think we need to at least mention.
Well, say them. I don't know if we're doing breakout guys.
Is this the time for that?
I don't think it's in the lightning round. Yeah, say it now.
I think Jared Davis will be in this discussion a year or two from now. He has some awareness he has to develop, though. He transitioned a little choppily last year to the NFL, which is fine. It's to be expected. Mm-hmm. But physical traits, he has. I mean, he should be top 10 by physical traits. And then the other guy who's not really – he might not be there, but he's so improved and he's become an important player is Devondre Campbell in Atlanta. I think he is potentially a – more gifted, physically gifted version of K.J. Wright in Seattle. And that would be very similar. K.J. Wright, Bobby Wagner tandem, which we'll talk about in a minute, Campbell and Deion Jones tandem there. Devondre Campbell really improved last season. He's become a nice player. He plays so much faster than he did initially.
Yeah, I was going to say, he came into the league as kind of a, boy, this guy looks good, and he's going to test well, and he has the traits, but really had never put it all together at I believe it was Minnesota. He was a Minnesota guy, but that's good to hear. It's good to hear it's working out for him. Jared Davis.
Go ahead, Andy.
Okay. Well, I was going to move on to Jared Davis. Is that okay?
Well, let me real quick on the Campbell thing. Those guys that come in with those dominant physical traits.
Mm-hmm.
Part of the reason they play that simple cover three foundation is now a lot of man to man, but it's a single high defense that Dan Quinn plays. It's very straightforward. It's that Seahawks style. Part of the reason they play that is they believe players, especially fast ones, can develop nicely in it for two reasons. One, it's simple, so there's not a lot to think about. It's more instincts and reaction, and hey, these are our rules. This is how we do it. We're going to do it the same way most of the time so you can get better at doing it. And then two is when you play the same thing again and again, you see the same thing from offenses again and again because there's only so many ways that you can attack cover three. And so as you see the same things, you get better at defending them. You learn to anticipate them. You play faster against them. So it's not uncommon. Look at Jacksonville as well. Telvin Smith was a mid-round pick, or I think like a fifth-round pick if I recall. He's gotten better and played faster every year of his career. Those guys in Seattle, they develop steadily. These teams that play this simple scheme believe their players can develop, especially fast, because they only see a certain number of things on the field.
Jared Davis, he started coming off the field a little bit more late in the year. What's the deal with that, Andy?
I was surprised by that too. Reeves Maben, another young linebacker, replaced him in passing situations. And really what it was is Davis, as the season progressed, it just got to be a lot. There was just, the passing situations present more for a linebacker to sort out. You're much more of a reactionary player. You're not a – I mean, you are always reacting as a linebacker, but there's one thing to chase the ball downhill and run D versus retreat into coverage and then read both sides of the field and routes coming from you in all these different directions. I think it just took a toll on Davis, and that's what I meant by his rookie season was choppy.
Yeah.
Mentally, he wore down a little bit.
Okay. Well, let's unveil the top 10 here. Number 10, Eric Kendricks. Number 9, Deion Jones. Number 8, Levante David. And 7th was Anthony Barr. So, you kind of mentioned something interesting toward the end of that Vikings discussion before. Was Kendricks simply, was he an easier deal to get done? And was he sort of a more reasonably priced player to just sort of lock him in and just sort of say, you know, we got our... let's say, for the sake of this, let's say Kendricks is your B-plus linebacker, Barr is your A-minus talent. Obviously, they're very close, but is that what it kind of comes down to? You just sort of get the reliability of knowing you can lock in Eric Kendricks.
I guess. I don't know. I mean, I would love to know, and they'll never tell us, not publicly. Yeah. I'd love to know why they did Kendricks first. Barr came into the league in 2014, but he was a first-round pick, so they had the fifth-year option on him. Kendricks came in 2015 as a second-round pick, so they did not have a fifth-year option. So their contracts were both had the same sense of urgency. They're going to expire around the same time. I would guess Kendricks was just a little bit easier to do. That'd be my guess, because that – Like from our friends on the Purple Podcast, we're not talking about, well, why doesn't Eric Kendricks have better stats? What's his, you know, it's, I would think it'd be that. I don't know. Who's better? I mean, who do you think's better? Who's more valuable in that scheme?
I'm the only one of our voters who, I had Kendricks 9, Barr 10. And you guys, I mean, you know, you and Ryan were both very close with the two of them, but you both had Barr over Kendricks, so. That's my thought, Andy.
Well, I was not brimming with confidence on that vote.
Yeah.
It's Kendricks is faster than Barr. I think he's a little bit more versatile in coverage. Barr is more imposing and intimidating, and I do think there's something to be said for that. Together, they work very well. I think we can agree on that. I mean, you've got a very nice stylistic pairing there.
Yep. No, and that's why I gave Kendricks the slight edge over Barr is the versatility, and you know, like you always say, he's a guy who can come down to that A-gap and then retreat all the way back as far as he needs to go when they're simply showing the A-gap blitz and want him to drop into coverage, which is usually what they do.
Yeah. Yep.
Let's see. Number 6, this is C.J. Mosley. Number 5, Telvin Smith. And number 4, K.J. Wright. I guess Telvin Smith is the newcomer to our countdown. He made the countdown last year, but I don't think he made the top 5. I mean, Telvin Smith is... can we say Telvin Smith fastest linebacker in the NFL?
I think he plays the fastest. Mm-hmm. Now that, unfortunately, that Ryan Shazier's out of that conversation. He needs to be kept clean and have space around him. He is not great in traffic, and his body's he's a long, slender, lightweight-bodied guy. So he almost looks like a stalking safety. Yeah, he does, like McDonald and T.J. Yep. McDonald in Miami almost. So, but when he has room to run, I think he's the prettiest running linebacker in the league. I love him, and he can also apply that running to coverage, which is very important, as we said, when you play those simple zone schemes, because teams know what you'll be in, so they can attack specific guys very easily, and the guys they're going to attack are those linebackers with wide receivers, so you have to be able to run.
And top three here, I guess I'd call this the only real drama in the top three. Sean Lee did edge out Bobby Wagner for the two spots. So we had Bobby Wagner 3, Sean Lee 2, and of course Luke Kuechly number 1. We have a Bobby Wagner clip here. This one is from Locked On Seahawks podcast. That's Locked On Seahawks with Grant Goldberg and Spike Friedman.
And we highlight him every week on this podcast, but I think we should just make it a thing of, like, every week post game we're talking Bobby Wagner. Nothing speaks to this team's execution and their capacity, their ceiling, more than Bobby Wagner's performance. When that dude tackles, guys get stopped, and he doesn't miss tackles this year.
No one escapes Bobby Wagner's clutches, and it's insane watching him from a week to week basis get seemingly more dominant.
Yeah, I mean that kind of says it all right there. And you know, certainly down the stretch last year when Wagner was dealing with I believe it was a hamstring, you know, that was of all the injuries last year, that might have been the most damaging to that Seahawks defense. And I guess I'll bring this up. Albert Breer, you know, who's written the Monday column for us the last couple weeks at the MMQB, he talked to Pete Carroll for a while, and not surprisingly, Pete Carroll is his usual positive, optimistic self. And Pete's really excited with the turnover there, because now he can bring back his old mantra of competition, and we have competition everywhere, and that's going to bring out the best in everyone. And that's something they, certainly on the defensive side of the ball, that is not something they had the last couple of years. But when you look at what they have in Seattle, you can kind of, if you squint, you can kind of convince yourself, because you can kind of say, well, you know, if that defensive line is going to be dominant, if Frank Clark's going to turn into a sort of a superstar type of player, and some of these loose parts they picked up, they get the best out of them, maybe that takes care of the problems at cornerback. But really, you look at the fact that they still have Wagner and KJ Wright at the linebacker spots, and you kind of say, how much can they really fall off when you have those two guys on the field?
Yeah, it's the Seahawks defense. It's been the most interesting defense to discuss, because it gets to the heart of shows like this. Is who's the best player on those defenses? Is it Earl Thomas, Cam Chancellor? Mm-hmm. Was it Richard Sherman? Was it Michael Bennett, which a lot of people said around the league? Was it Cliff Avril, who was a great edge rushing playmaker? And the answer to that question really speaks to your football philosophy. You're basically answering the question of how would I build a team if I'm starting from scratch, which is always a fun discussion. The more I watch that Seahawks defense, and it's been a very gradual realization, the more I think those two linebackers are the defining pieces of that defense. Yeah. They're what really make it go. They're certainly involved in the run game, and they're involved in the passing game a lot. They're the most involved players by the nature of the scheme. And if you were just starting a defense completely brand new, and you didn't know it was the old Seahawks defense, and you didn't have memories of the Super Bowl appearances, and you said Bobby Wagner and KJ Wright together in that scheme, you'd find a lot of ways to like that defense around them, regardless of who they're putting out there. So, yeah, I bet Seattle's defense will be better than we thought. It will not be as good. You know, it's nice that Pete Carroll has competition. I'd rather have so many superstars that we don't need competition. But yeah, I understand what he's saying as a coach, and it's his job to do these. I get it. But they won't be as good as they were before, but they're going to be better than people expect, because Wagner and Wright, KJ Wright, those two together are the key to that, the biggest key to that defense.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there you go. That's the top 10 linebackers right there. Let's wrap it up with the lightning-ish round. the fastest 45 minutes in sports. Number one, let's set aside Kuechly, Wagner, and Lee. Who is the linebacker with the most legitimate shot to win Defensive Player of the Year honors?
I will give you two. Telvin Smith, because there's a chance for turnovers whenever you're in a fast defense, and let's say he catches five interceptions and takes two fumble recoveries back to the house, and he does it in December when everyone's voters' minds are fresh. I mean, I could see him something like that. The other one, who we haven't talked about at all in this show, but if the 49ers become a 12-4 team all of a sudden, which I don't, I don't think they're that at that spot yet. I don't think they're very deep defensively, but let's say they do, which would not be the biggest shock in the world. I could see Reuben Foster's stock skyrocketing. He jumps off the film. There's no question the talent is there.
Yeah. I would have said Foster. I do think he's going to serve a suspension to start the year, even though the domestic violence arrest ended up being dismissed. I think that's just how the NFL works. I was going to throw out, and I don't really believe this, but I'm going to throw it out anyway. I'm going to throw out Levante David, because I think with Vita Vea basically occupying blockers in the middle of that line, I think David's just going to go nuts and just make a ton of plays this year and sort of get back to the I don't want to say he disappointed, but it's almost like he reached sort of star level and we were waiting for him to ascend to superstar level, and he never quite did. And I think this is the year where he kind of he does that. So Levante David is my dark horse favorite for Defensive Player of the Year this year. Best free agent acquisition: Tahir Whitehead to Oakland, Avery Williamson to the Jets, or Anthony Hitchens to the Chiefs, or other if you have someone else you like.
I'll go Whitehead to Oakland. Oakland badly needed help at linebacker. They got Whitehead for $19 million over, I think, about 3 years, if I were something like that. It was a higher-end, modest contract, you know, upper middle tier. I like Whitehead's game. A little bit inconsistent, but when he's right, when he pushes the button and he did it the right time, he's as explosive as anyone.
I'll go Avery Williamson to the Jets. I think he came off the field a little bit more than I would have liked in Tennessee, and I was surprised by that.
Yeah.
I think they leave him out there for the Jets, and he gets to do a little bit more, and we'll see what we'll see if the Titans had good reason to take him off the field. Next one, Roquan Smith was a top 10 pick as a 3-4 inside linebacker. Does that still make sense in today's game?
It does for the Bears. That scheme relies on linebackers more. And I know they're a 3-4, and they are. That's on first or second down, though. Most of the time, they're in nickel like every other defense, and they wind up being a 4-2 at the end of it. But, they are more of a 3-4 than a lot of these three. Like the Rams, for example, are not a 3-4. We think of it like that, but they play the same stuff that most of the 4-3 teams play. It's just a little bit of a wrinkle that we call them a 3-4. The Bears, that's not true, but Vic Fangio, their D coordinator, he is a master at disguising coverages, and it starts with their split safeties when they go two deep safeties, but what really makes them, that makes them good. What makes them great at disguising coverages is the way they use their linebackers and the subtle ways those guys line up, the blurry movement. That's an important position in that scheme. The Bears are a very underrated defense. When Fangio had his best defense, it was with Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman in that 2012 year at the Niners when I went and watched Ray Lewis almost undress in the locker room. And if they can recreate some kind of blend of that, if Roquan Smith can be a star in that scheme, the Bears are a 10-6 caliber team almost.
I agree with you, and I actually want to make the same point that you made about the Bears specifically, Roquan Smith making sense there, but... there you go, what Andy said.
Well, remember, they had their pick of everybody in the draft. They had all the linebackers were on the board when they picked, so they got to choose. And their D-line, Mitch Unrein is not there anymore, but Eddie Goldman, and especially Akeem Hicks, those guys are dominant grown man run defenders. So I don't think Roquan Smith's lack of size, even though Patrick Willis and Navarro Bowman were more thumpers and very physical guys, especially Willis, I don't think Smith, who probably isn't that style of NFL player because of his size, I don't think it's going to be a big deal because he plays behind that D-line.
Last one, true or false, in 3 years, Telvin Smith and Miles Jack are the best linebacking tandem in football.
In 3 years, true.
Okay. I'll just say false. I'll say it'll be Kuechly and Shaq Thompson.
What about Van Der Esch and Jalen Smith?
Oh, that's really
that's a gamble. Those are like 20-1 odds.
But... I don't like Jalen Smith. I'm sure he's a perfectly nice gentleman, but I don't like that. I do like Van Der Esch, but
I don't think Jalen Smith was as bad last year as people thought. We don't know because he's got to get healthy still. I think this will be the tell year for Jalen Smith because now if he's not healthy now, he'll never be. So he was not still fully back, and you could see in his style of play and his approach last season.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we'll see. I'll keep an open mind with Jalen Smith, but right now I won't I will not step on that bandwagon. Well, that's going to do it for this one. Thanks, as always, to producer Shelby Royston, all the guys at Cadence 13 who make us sound good every week. Thanks to our researcher, Ryan Taylor, for making us sound smart. And thanks to our sponsors this week. That is One Blade and Buffalo Wild Wings. Please support them the way they support our show. Most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. You really are the best. Andy and I want to hear from you. We're both on Twitter, Andy_Benoit and GGramling_SI. You can also get us via email, talkback@themmqb.com. Just put podcast in the subject line. Or we are both on Facebook, so get in touch. Remember to listen and subscribe to new unarchived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer. And of course, this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including themmqb.com, si.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team. Every day.